first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. Second rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. And I'm sorry to everyone.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
What yet? Monsters out there, leaking in here, all sinking in no power?
PC load letter? What the fuck does that mean?
First things first, where's your shit at? I've got a turtle head poking out.
Here with a special report is a midget in a bikini.
Now that the Senate has fulfilled its constitutional responsibility, bringing this process to a conclusion, I want to say again to the American people how profoundly sorry I am for what I said and did.
Tell me, you actually saw the gunmen and they were firing at you and your group?
Yeah.
Describe that scene.
Well, me and my friend Chris were just out during lunch by the student parking lot, and we heard what sounded like firecrackers, and so we looked over and we saw some guys with guns creeping around a corner. And we thought it was like a senior prank or something, so we just kept watching to see what they were going to do. And we saw them shoot three kids.
I was dreaming when I wrote this, forgive me if it goes astray.
But when I woke up this morning, could have sworn it was judgment day.
Sky was all purple, there were people running everywhere. Trying to run from the destruction.
Island in space, our home, our civilization, our human innovations. How could the omission of two simple digits affect the destiny of all humankind? Y2K, what does it mean? How will it affect you, your family, your community, your nation, our world?
And so in the 60s, some bright programmers said, wait a minute, why are we punching in 1967? Why don't we just put 67, save the 19?
It is estimated that over $600 billion is being spent worldwide to address the Y2K problem. The simple dilemma is that there are so many lines of code and microchips that need to be reviewed that there are just not enough computer professionals and not enough days left before January 1st, 2000 to look into every area that must be addressed. It is our primary goal in this program to help families and communities across the world to prepare and to work together regardless of what may or may not occur as a result of Y2K. There still exists, even in 1999, a general state of either denial, complacency, or even apathy about both the reality and the potential effects of Y2K. And unless we appreciate what may occur, we may not be ready, either individually or as a civilization. In dead of winter, at the stroke of midnight, January 1st, 2000, elevators may stop. Heat may vanish. Credit cards and ATMs may cease to function. Airplanes and trains may come to a halt. Telephones and televisions may not utter a sound. Water delivery systems may not deliver water for cooking, drinking, or bathing. Streetlights, stoplights, lights in buildings everywhere may flicker out. Hospitals, clinics, pharmacies may be unable to provide proper medical care. Banks and stock markets around the world may suffer some form of meltdown. And nuclear power plants may cease to generate the electricity we need for all aspects of our daily lives.
What is going to happen is a combination of events, hundreds of thousands of events, literally across the globe, that will affect other systems.
One of the key aspects of chaos theory is the idea of sensitive dependence on initial conditions, which basically means that one small thing happening over here can eventually cause really big things to happen on the other side of the world.
You will start to see systems coming down.
You have a potential for power outages, water outages.
My main worry is the energy grid.
And if we can't get power, we can't get water.
Water will be available in most municipalities, but I am convinced there are some where the water system will break down.
It'll be more like a cancer where one little problem kind of leads to another problem, is connected to another problem.
I think we should all prepare ourselves for a ground war on the year 2000 issue when it comes to insurance coverage.
I expect we will have brownouts and regional blackouts.
Communities will have disruptions, and maybe this other community will have a different disruption than this one.
So it's something that is totally unpredictable.
And it will just kind of spread. And
I spoke with a lady at the IRS here a few months ago, and she had 3,000 people working on the year 2000 conversion, still can't get it completed by the year 2000.
I think there are individual banks that will probably go bankrupt. There are individual credit unions that will disappear over this issue.
We get people who email us and say, I'm a Y2K fixer at a major bank, and every time we try it, it crashes.
There are medical machines that will fail in ICU units.
What we're finding are computer programs that don't work.
The hospital's revenue stream may stop, just dead stop.
Some people will die.
Not doing anything about the Y2K problem could lead to failure of up to 330,000 small businesses.
You know, things just kind of topple over one after the other.
We're talking about a loss of a way of life, you know, our dependence on this uninterrupted life in which the energy grid supplies a lot of our needs on a daily basis.
You're going to see some real dislocation, panic, fear.
By this time, in the year 1999, the term Y2K has entered the public consciousness. World leaders in government, spiritual, and corporate circles have all found themselves in one of the greatest dilemmas facing humankind. But the dilemma is not Y2K itself. Rather, the concern for world leaders is how we, as individuals, as communities, should best approach Y2K. But the reality is there are no Y2K experts. And this is because nothing like this has ever occurred before in the history of humankind. The reality is no one knows exactly what's going to happen.
Yep, 1999, the year of Y2K, impending doom.
Back on the Y2K front, despite all of the assurances that the Y2K computer problems are under control, at a cost of $100 billion in this country, a lot of Americans nonetheless are taking no chances. They're prepared to survive no matter what happens. NBC's Ann Thompson tonight on the Stocking Up and Lying Low.
Tonight, the countdown begins. Outside Seattle, Erin Scott Ashley loading her car, counting up her supplies.
It's just to be prepared, that's all, just in case.
All day, store director Rick Smith watched consumers get Y2K ready.
Batteries sell extremely well, the lamp oil, generators.
A lot of money was spent, and therefore made, in an attempt to avoid possibilities or hypotheticals. But in the end, basically, nothing happened. And there are two ways to look at it. Either nothing happened because any possible issues were fixed, or nothing happened because nothing major really was going to happen, and it was a bunch of hype and scare tactics and fear-mongering and cashing in, and probably most of the $300 billion in the U.S., $600 billion worldwide, went to waste and was really misspent. There were some isolated cases where Y2K supposedly caused some minor issues. In Sheffield in the UK, incorrect Down syndrome test results were sent to 154 pregnant women, and two abortions were actually carried out as a direct result of incorrect results that somehow were caused to be sent out because of Y2K. I don't know. In Ishikawa, Japan, radiation monitoring equipment failed at midnight. In Onagawa, Japan, an alarm sounded at a nuclear power plant at 2 minutes after midnight. In the U.S., 150 slot machines at racetracks in Delaware stopped working, so that was a tragedy. Also, the U.S. Naval Observatory, which runs the master clock that keeps the country's official time, gave the date on its website as the 1st of January, 19,100. And in France, the National Weather Forecasting Service, the date on their webpage was 1-1-19,100. But that didn't cause everything to crash or the apocalypse to occur. Really, Y2K was much ado about nothing. But as for rock music in 1999, it was a pretty good year. Probably not one of the best years of the 90s, but still, I'm really fond of all these albums on my top 10 list of 1999, so let's get to it. This is episode number 99 of the podcast, so I'm going to talk about my personal top 10 favorite albums of the corresponding year of 1999. So that's a song by D-Generation, New York City band, from their third album, came out in 1999, record called Through the Darkness. Honorable mention on this episode. Some other honorable mentions from 1999 would be Show Business Is My Life, the solo album by Dr. Frank from Mr. T Experience, who was a guest on episode number 21 of the podcast, And another great album from 1999, or at least really good, is The Soft Bulletin by The Flaming Lips. As for my top 10 favorite albums of 1999, let's kick things off at number 10 with a record called The Evil Powers of Rock and Roll by The Super Suckers. The Super Suckers are a pop-punk band formed in Tucson, Arizona in 1988, but they moved to Seattle the next year in 89, and their first full-length album, The Smoke of Hell, was released by legendary Seattle indie label Sub Pop in 1992. The band would release three more records with Sub Pop, the last of which was a country album. So this album, The Evil Powers of Rock and Roll, was their fifth album overall, but the first album post-Sub Pop and post-country. I was a huge, huge fan of the Super Suckers' first two albums especially, and The Evil Powers of Rock and Roll is not as good as those, but it's still a really good album and a lot of fun. I actually played a song from this album called Dead Meat, which clocks in at 1 minute and 59 seconds on the 2-minute warning episode. But let's hear another great song from the album right now, called Stuff and Nonsense. So The Clash, legendary punk band and one of my favorite bands of all time, they sort of self-destructed in 1984 when guitarist Mick Jones was fired and Joe Strummer tried to relaunch the band with a new lineup and an almost universally reviled album in 1985 called Cut the Crap, which is not very good. And after that, Joe Strummer embarked on a very sporadic solo career, contributing to a series of movie soundtracks before finally releasing a pretty lackluster solo album in 1989 called Earthquake Weather. And after that, it would be 10 years until his next album. This album, number 9 on my list, a record credited to Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros called Rock, Art, and the X-Ray Style. It's a very eclectic, layered album, but it really works. The songs are great.
I see a million walk the city mile. The ticker tape kings and a juvenile. Will anybody tell me which way to go? Will anybody come back on the CB radio? I'm counting the stars and the telegraph poles, and each one represents the hopes of a soul. You think that God wouldn't be so hard when you see all the little children running, running in the backyard on a Mississippi goose with a sub-Saharan song. Somebody is wailing in the financial district, son. Could anybody feel the distance to the Nile? I want to live and I want to dance a while. Gonna make like getting on my rockabilly train. Gonna beat out the blues on my ball and chain. You can't pull a hold of people living now, ain't got no heart and ain't never had none. Down on the border, they crawl all the way to get a clip of living with a clean all spray.
Coming in at number 8 on my list is a self-titled album by a band called All Systems Go. And this is the band that was formed by John Kastner, frontman for Canadian pop-punk band The Doughboys, who have been mentioned several times on the podcast. One of my favorite bands ever. After The Doughboys broke up, Kastner formed this band with two members of a California pop-punk band called Big Drill Car that I was never a big fan of. Frank Daly and Mark Arnold were the names of the guys from Big Drill Car. Kastner and Frank Daly would share songwriting and lead vocal duties on the record. And although it's not nearly as good as the last Doughboys album, which was called Turn Me On and was amazing, All Systems Go is really good, especially when it resembles the Doughboys, like on the opening track, All I Want. Superchunk are one of my favorite bands of the 90s, a decade in which they released seven albums, the last of the bunch coming in at number seven on my list of my top 10 favorite albums of 1999. This is an album called Come Pick Me Up, and this record really stands out as sounding different from the previous albums, mostly due probably to the production work by Jim O'Rourke, which I have minor issues with, but in the end, while the record might sound different, the songs are strong and very readily identifiable as Superchunk songs, like this one, Low Branches.
Thank you.
Coming in at number 6 on my list is an album that I actually played a song from recently. The very last song on episode 95, the 90s power pop episode, was a song from this album, Utopia Parkway by Fountains of Wayne, a song called Amity Gardens. Utopia Parkway was the second album by Fountains of Wayne, but their first album as a full band. The debut was really just made as a duo by Chris Collingwood and Adam Schlesinger. Let's hear the missed opportunity hit single that just wasn't to be from this record, a song which actually dates back to the pre-Fountains of Wayne band that Collingwood and Schlesinger had called Pinwheel. This is a song by Fountains of Wayne from Utopia Parkway called Troubled Times.
When you think you found something worth holding on to, were you reaching for attention, hoping she would notice you collecting bottles and thrown away cans, like she was returnable, one day would refill your hands. How she loved you, all you imagined, fit so well into your plan. Troubled times.
When Uncle Tupelo broke up, the two songwriters in the band formed their own bands. Jay Farrar formed Sun Volt, and Jeff Tweedy formed Wilco, with the brilliant Jay Bennett, formerly of a great but very obscure band called Titanic Love Affair. Jeff Tweedy's songs were always my favorites in Uncle Tupelo, but at first it seemed like Farrar was upstaging Tweedy, but Wilco eventually really left Sun Volt in the dust. Wilco's debut wasn't great, but their second album, Being There, which was a very 70s rock-influenced sort of double album, that was a very cool record. And then they sort of reinvented themselves with this, their third album, Summer Teeth, which ranks at number 5 on my list of my top 10 favorite albums of 1999. We just heard an amazing song from this record called I'm Always in Love. That song is track 5 on the album. Now let's hear the next song, track 6. Killer pop song by Wilco called Nothing's Ever Gonna Stand in My Way, parentheses, again.
We found a way, darkness, to make some sense out of this mess. Let's test, but I believe, I guess it's all we need.
Nothing's ever gonna stand in my way.
At number 4 on my list is another band that got mentioned recently on the 90s Power Pop episode. Great Canadian band called Sloan. S-L-O-A-N. They formed in 1991 in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and have released 11 albums to date, including in 1999 their fifth album, a record called Between the Bridges. We already heard a song from the record called Don't You Believe a Word, written and sung by guitarist Jay Ferguson. Now let's hear probably my favorite song from the record, written and sung by bassist Chris Murphy, a song by Sloan from Between the Bridges called All By Ourselves.
I got my body and my mind on the same page, and honey, now happiness is all the rage. I got my body and my mind on the same page, and honey, now happiness is all the rage. And me,
At number 3 on my list of my personal top 10 favorite albums to be released in 1999 is the third album by a Milwaukee-based emo pop band called The Promise Ring. I actually went to high school with frontman Davey Von Bohlen. He was a year behind me, and I saw one of Davey's early bands, Ten Boy Summer, play in my friend's living room, and between you and me, they were horrible. I also saw guitarist Jason's previous band, None Left Standing, open for Rancid in Madison in probably 1993. And speaking of 1993, if you refer back to the episode where I counted down my top 10 albums of 1993, which of course was episode 93, I played a Milwaukee band on that episode called Alligator Gun. Well, that band's bass player, Scott Shanebeck, would eventually join the Promise Ring, and actually his first album with the band was this album from 1999, a record called Very Emergency. I saw The Promise Ring many times, beginning before their first record even had come out, and I watched them develop their sound, and it was really fun to watch. They changed a lot between the first and third albums. The best record is probably the middle one, the second record, Nothing Feels Good, but Very Emergency is also great. We already heard the first song, Happiness is All the Rage, but let's hear my favorite song from the album, and probably my favorite song by the band, really. An amazing pop song by The Promise Ring called Arms and Danger.
You, yeah, you, no one could be happier. We'll be right back.
At number two on my list is the fourth album by an indie rock band out of Boise, Idaho, called Built to Spill. Built to Spill was formed in 1992 by former Tree person Doug March, and their 1994 album, their second album, There's Nothing Wrong with Love, is one of my favorite records of the 90s. Just an amazing pop album, brilliant songwriting, great production. I have a lot of affection for that record. But Built to Spill really shifted gears for their major label debut in 1997, a record called Perfect From Now On, which I like. But it's very, very different from There's Nothing Wrong with Love. Almost seems like a completely different band. This album, the album from 1999, the fourth album, Keep It Like a Secret, took a step back toward There's Nothing Wrong with Love. And so I like it a lot more than Perfect From Now On. We already heard a great song from this album called Center of the Universe. Now let's hear another awesome song from Keep It Like a Secret by Built to Spill. A song called Sidewalk. We'll be right back. All right, this is it. We've arrived at the top spot. My favorite album to be released in the year of 1999. Jimmy Eat World was formed in Mesa, Arizona in 1993 by guitarists Jim Adkins and Tom Linton, bassist Rick Birch, and drummer Zach Lind. It's interesting to note that on the band's first self-titled album, Tom Linton sang every song but one. But by the time of the band's second album and their first for Capitol Records, great album called Static Prevails, just amazing, Jim Adkins was already singing more than half the songs. And for their third album, this album from 1999, a record called Clarity, Jim Adkins had pretty much taken over, with Linton really only singing lead on one song. So yeah, my favorite album of 1999 is an absolute masterpiece by Jimmy Eat World called Clarity. Clarity is a heavy, powerful, creative, emotional, cathartic record overflowing with great melodies. I don't think any genre label, from heavy metal to punk, has suffered a worse fate than the term emo, a term that was swiftly co-opted by a plethora of worse and worse bands, many of whom made pathetic attempts at impersonating the raw and honest emotion of the music on an album like Clarity. The term emo was so swiftly co-opted and drained of all meaning that I hesitate to even use it to describe Jimmy Eat World, but at the time that Clarity came out, they were thought of as an emo band. One of those bands inspired by Sunny Day Real Estate, but not derivative at all, very original. And that's the problem with emo post-Clarity. It just became more and more derivative and unoriginal. But Clarity, my favorite album of 1999 by Jimmy Eat World. It's an amazing rock and roll album. That's all you need to call it, is rock and roll. There's really no reason to describe it any other way. Check out the title track.
Talking to me, so say what
So when Clarity came out, it was pretty much ignored. Fucking Pitchfork even gave it a bad review, which I'm sure they're pretty embarrassed of now and would probably rather people not know or remember. Clarity now is a very highly regarded album by all of those in the know. But as amazing as Clarity is, at the time, Jimmy Eat World found themselves dropped by their record label, Capitol. But wisely, they were scooped back up by DreamWorks. And on DreamWorks, they released a vastly inferior album to Clarity in 2001 called Bleed American. And it was a hit. I was hugely disappointed by that album when it came out. I did love the song The Middle, Jimmy Eat World's hit. That is an amazing song. But I would argue that Lucky Denver Mint, a very, very similar song from Clarity, was also better. And where were all the fans of The Middle when Lucky Denver Mint was a single? But as much as I was disappointed, and I'm not really into the album Bleed American, I will say that Jimmy Eat World's follow-up to Bleed American, a record called Futures, is also brilliant. Not as good as Clarity, but really great. And I saw Jim Adkins play an acoustic show earlier this year, and I was absolutely blown away by how great he was. The guy's a genius, just an amazing talent, and Clarity truly is his masterpiece. So yeah, Clarity by Jimmy Eat World. Fucking insanely good, and my favorite album to be released in 1999, and really one of my favorite albums ever.
Yourself, you know.
All right, so there you have it. My personal top 10 favorite albums to be released in the year of 1999. What did I miss? Let me know. rockandorrollpodcast@gmail.com. Go to Facebook, click like on the Facebook page so you can keep tabs on what's going on at the show. Lots of links and everything at the blog, rockandorrollpodcast.blogspot.com. And now to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with a song by Jimmy Eat World from a 10-inch record that was released by Fueled by Ramen. And if I remember correctly, this came out before Clarity did. But it has Lucky Denver Mint and For Me This Is Heaven that would be on Clarity. And then there's a song called Your New Aesthetic, parentheses demo. Now there's a song on Clarity called Your New Aesthetic, but very, very different. Like they took maybe some elements of this song and completely rewrote it as a completely different song. Some of the same lyrics too. But I prefer the song called Your New Aesthetic that is on this 10-inch that came out on Fueled by Ramen. So here it is, right from my 10-inch, Your New Aesthetic demo by Jimmy Eat World. Till next time.
For your time, it's written out. Work means nothing by itself.
be back.